Easy, now we can split it.
Ah, okay, now it gets split.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so first, so this is week two. So week one, unique reads are 0.5 GB.
Okay.
For entire week.
Okay.
And week two, unique reads are less than 0.5 GB. Week three, unique reads are 0.5, again 0.5 GB. Right? So over a duration of 1 week, you're reading around 0.5 GB. But this is actually, 0.5 GB is not small. If you look at the entire size of the disk, online in total is 5 GB.
Really?
Yeah. So you sent me the information, you sent me the
yeah.
numbers, right?
Yeah.
The actual used space on
oh,
the
yeah,
disk
yeah.
is
yeah.
around 5 gigabytes.
Yes. Yeah.
So this is 10% of that.
Which in that case is a lot, yeah.
It's substantial, but it's okay. Now, the other thing is that, so this is all accesses. So I guess the what you want to look at are only the red ones. Okay. So the red ones, all accesses, as you go from one day to next, it's actually changing quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
If you take one, but 50% of the data that's accessed here is also accessed. Other thing is that these are not consecutive day overlaps. This day is the red bar is overlap with the day one, so there is a substantial distance between what I see here. So this is when you look at only the reads.
Whoa.
Because remember the writes are always to different content, right?
Yes.
So the content similarity for the writes based on your analysis was
low.
Was low, but the content similarity for reads is high.
Yes.
So really, maybe we should take that into account and say we duplicate only reads.
Yeah, that's the idea, yeah.
So instead of duplicating everything, and if you look at the reads, well, on a day-to-day basis, there is still a lot of variation. But if you look at 3-day intervals, right, and see it's 90%. So just looking at the red bars, these are reads that overlap with the first day.
Whoa.
Only the reads.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot more locality if you just look at read workload. And if you look at week long, and again, the overlap is pretty high. Right, it's about 90%. 3-day also about 90%. Okay. It's exactly the same story. Actually, this was for the reads. Exactly same story, and the unique data access 0.5 GB again, and the file system size is also 5 GB to 6 GB for webmail. I should read webmail, by the way. It's webmail. All of these are webmail. So if you look at 1-day intervals, these are the reads. So when you look at the reads, then one thing to notice is that the top 20% of the reads actually changing substantially.
Mm-hmm.
The popular data is changing, but if you look at multiple day, you see the popular data is fairly fixed, and even just this is all accesses. Sorry, so forget about that. Okay, here we see all reads there is overlap, right? So it's for 3 days it's higher than a single day. For 1 week, it's usually about 90%. So the question is, what should be the granularity at which we choose the duplication? So one possibility is that we could maintain windows, right? Say, okay, here is my window. This is the last 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
And every day, I'm going to replicate based on the last 1 week.
Hold on, I don't know.
Okay. So I keep a window of working sets on a per day basis.
Okay.
So one thing which we could do is duplicate every week, or we could duplicate every day, but always taking the last week as the working set.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So these two are independent. One is the size of the history, you choose the working set, and the second is duplication interval.
Yes.
These do not have to be the same.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
Right? So that's why the parameterizing this optimization becomes a little complex. And
yeah. And if we can, in some way, based on this analysis, to determine what is the right window of history and the replication, that would be interesting.
Yeah. So, I guess before replaying those traces with the copies, you should calculate the same thing for content. So, I could do it, but you have to send me your scripts, or...
No, I'll do it. I said I'm going to do that, right?
Yes.
Okay, I'll do
it. But I didn't send you everything yet. I need to send you the traces, or a tool to merge traces.
Okay.
I was preparing something more, a script more generic, but I'll send you one for type of work, or something more hardcore. It doesn't matter.
Okay. I mean, it's okay if you want to take a little bit more time to make it.
No. What I'm saying is that I'll send you something that works, that looks ugly, instead of spending more time to make it generic. So,
as long as I can just use it without looking at the code, it doesn't matter how ugly it looks.
Yeah.
If I need to change the code, then it becomes a problem. But if I don't need to change the code, then it doesn't matter
I'll send
how
you
it
what I have. Okay.
Okay. But there is no hurry. I probably will not be able to do this until Saturday or Sunday or Monday.
So it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
So you can take a few more days if you want. Okay, so what happened? I was going to show you for 1 week. 1 week reads. Interesting thing is that if you look at reads, you still have substantial overlap, right? And reads have high, in some sense, content similarity.
Yes.
So we can use these two observations to say, okay, it makes sense to duplicate reads.
Yes.
The other interesting thing is that if you look at the top 20% of the reads, there is not much overlap. But if you look at, there's not much overlap, but if you look at all, which means including writes, the writes are much more frequent than the reads, and there is overlap is huge, which means that the same block gets written over and over again with high frequency. But if we do this for content, the story will be completely different. The top 20% will probably be zero.
Yes. Yeah.
If we look at entire workload, but if we look at reads, it can only be greater, right?
Yeah. Yeah, greens will be higher
in this graph and substantially lower in this graph.
Yes.
If we look at content.
Yeah, for sure, yes. And for rights, we're saying that's more likely the journal, right? Writing to the same position over and over again must be the journal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so, yeah, I guess this is what I wanted to tell you. So, I think, for instance, parameters like history and duplication interval are something that we need to examine more closely. If we can, I'm trying to think if I can use this analysis to play with those parameters.
Yeah, it seems like, for example, calculating using the history of one day based on this means it's not a good idea. You need at least 3 days based on that. Things like that, yeah, it's very helpful. Yeah,
I need to do that for content and for reads and writes separately. Right?
Yes.
So, okay.
Yeah. I have one more question. Have you tried with Cheetah? It's too big, right?
Not that it's too big. I tried it, but I found out that Cheetah was corrupted.
Oh, yeah.
So my script broke, and then I need to go and fix my script first.
Yes,
But it's very easy, because, like you said, I just need to put a filter. But I need to run the whole thing again.
Yes.
So it takes time.
Yeah.
I haven't completed it yet.
Okay. I'll send you the pointers to the homes.
Mm-hmm.
Traces, but there is a problem with those that I discovered 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with those traces is that on new kernels. I mean, for read, I'm getting the data at the NIO function. So before I touch that memory, I make sure that there are no error calls, that everything was fine, that the request was fine. And I check a lot of things, pending bytes, everything on the IO. So it turns out that the new kernel, what I was assuming the error code and everything is not the same. So now on some new kernel, I was checking more than I used. So most of the reads, I wasn't getting them.
Oh.
So I fixed that like 2 weeks ago before, because on Apple, on this machine, I saw, like, he always has the newest kernel in the universe. So I saw that, that there were not too many reads. So I fixed the code on everything, and I have clean traces for the homes for 2 weeks.
That's good enough, I think. And we're going to collect traces, continue collecting traces.
Continuing collecting traces, yes.
Yes,
unless somebody removes the module, I don't think I asked the guy not to do it. Yeah, so for the other traces, I only have writes. I won't delete them, but I tell you the date after which is valid, and I give you a pointer to that.
Well, the other thing is that does Cheetah have multiple disks?
It's the same huge disk in NFS.
It's one disk. Or it's a RAID underneath.
Well, I see like one disk, but maybe it's a hardware RAID. I think it's a hardware RAID.
I think we should find out some of these details from Eric.
But
or even if you log into the machine, is there a way to find out what the configuration is?
If I do at the S, I'll see that there is only SDA.
Right,
and
if there is SDA, then it's probably hardware RAID.
Yeah.
If it's software RAID, you will see MDs.
Yes, no, I.
So you're doing SDA.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess if you can send email to Eric to ask him what is underneath the SDA, that would help.
No, I remember. I think hardware RAID.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there a way to find out how many disks there are?
I think Eric can push. Faster for me, I guess.
Yeah. So if you can ask him which, how many disks and which RAID, and if the stripe size, for instance, that sort of information would be useful for me.
Okay. Sure.
Okay. Cool. So the number three is, what did we say so far? Selective duplication.
Yes. So for the number three, the tricky things now are these parameters. And hopefully with the analysis we move, we'll have the parameters ready to be in replay.
Yeah. So I guess something like, for instance, if I have history size, right? And here I have hit rate.
Yeah.
Then
What is the bad thing? As you increase the history size, what's the effect? What happens?
The effect is that you need more scratch space.
You need to process more information, so you'll be using memory.
Correct. So for instance, if I have history size, then I can say, okay, if it's a history size of 1 day, then I have a hit rate certain value. Actually, let me just put mine. So I have, for instance, hit rate for all accesses as I'm increasing the history size, maybe increasing and then leveling out.
Yes, that would be
something like that.
Yeah.
And but this is only one parameter. There's another parameter also.
How often?
Duplication frequency or. So this sort of stuff, I guess I could do. It is easier to do this for simple, small traces. But my scripts are extremely inefficient, so when I do large ones, that's why I asked Eric to give me a big machine. But the problem I encountered was with NFS, so I need to move all the traces to the local disk and then do it. But I don't know how to confirm that the bottleneck is NFS. I see these RPC IOD.
Well,
IO daemon, which is consuming more CPU than my awk scripts. So my awk scripts are all running at 5% CPU on a 16 CPU machine. And I have them multi-threaded, so I have 16 awk scripts, and they're all running at 3 to 5% CPU. And
yeah,
I have this...
It has to be IO. CPU is too low.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has to be IO, but... this guy is going at 10% CPU. So, and I'm guessing that this RPC is because of NFS. There's no other RPC that would cause so much overhead for the kind of things that I'm doing. And this starts only when I start my scripts.
So, yeah, it's NFS. Yeah, I have exactly the same issue. But I can't leave it.
Yeah, but if I want to do all of these different parameters, I cannot afford to wait
it's
for
like a while.
So I need to certainly optimize it. Okay, so
how do you calculate unique sets? You sort and join? Yeah.
Well, actually, what do? I do a sort. And I do a join, exactly.
Yeah.
No, but I do join. I don't use shell any command to join.
I do join by hand.
Yeah, I do join by hand.
They say you join.
I didn't know that existed, so I wrote it.
Yeah,
if I knew it existed, maybe I would have used it.
Actually, there's another command that I didn't know it was so useful. I was calculating frequencies by hand, but there is a command called unique, and there is a parameter that
I used unique.
I did.
Oh, with unique, you can also specify frequency? Or it can give you
frequency? I calculate frequency. Minus C.
Oh.
Yeah. I was doing that by hand, but unique that.
I was using unique, but only during sorting. I wasn't using it to calculate frequency. Frequency, I wrote it by hand. Yeah. Oh, there's so much stuff which we should be reusing, right?
Yeah.
Just keep writing it on your own for no reason. But anyway, it works now, so.
Yeah, okay.
And I hope it's right. Okay, so.
By the way, about the traces. You might have the same concern, but I checked just in case. My concern was that the trace of one day and the trace another day, they don't get overlapped. They are not overlapped, I checked. I mean, the last time of the trace of one day is lower than the first time of the trace of the next day.
So, which means that...
I mean, we need that it's okay, because I thought, well, maybe there is so much the intersection of those workings that is so high because maybe there is something wrong with the summarization. I see an overlap here, but it's actually
so it is okay. You think?
Yeah, I checked.
No, I didn't really encounter the problem with that because what I'm doing is that I'm concatenating multiple days and then sorting them.
Okay.
So even if the times are not aligned, they get sorted out.
Yes, but the thing is that when you want to pick the IOs for one day, you use the file that's named after the day.
Yes.
My concern was that maybe this file includes requests from the previous day.
Okay.
Because you see that it could happen because the...
because the writes have not completed, or?
No. The thing is how the debugger space queue works.
Oh, okay.
It's not that you read and it gets empty. The elements would stay there. Yeah. But luckily, I checked for all the days, and there is no intersection. The last day for this guy is the first day, is before the first day.
Okay, so there is no problem.
Yeah, there is no problem, yeah.
Okay, that's... Okay, so I think one thing we need to talk about, okay, so, wow, how do I have conclusion before motivation? Section 2 is conclusion. Section 3 is motivation. What I was working on that day.
This is not valid anymore for REIT.
Not valid anymore?
Yes. You remember the problem that I wasn't getting? It will be better than this, because I mean I had the traces and I had sector numbers, and based on sector numbers, it was an alignment problem. I wasn't getting the correct content.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's going to be better than
yeah.
That's good. But let's talk a little bit about the layout of the paper.
Okay.
So I think introduction is straightforward in some sense. I mean, there is a formula to write the introduction, but section 2 is something that we need to be really careful in how we plan and how we present it. So I think the goal of section 2 would be to do some analysis that will motivate each of these three techniques.
Exactly, yeah. Show some graphs, some numbers, and the idea is that the techniques will appear logically. I mean, it makes all sense in the world to use these techniques based on the data we show.
Mm-hmm. So the first is content-based caching. So what do we want to show? What kind of analysis do we want to show?
Content-based caching. That we use distance and number of hits if you use sector-based caching compared to content-based caching is worse.
So one thing which I was thinking about is how do you calculate that average reuse distance number? If a sector is not reused, what do? You just ignore it, or you actually give it a reuse?
No. I just ignore it. That's why it's important to have, at the same time, the number of hits.
So you ignore it?
Yes. I only check, hits. And between a hit and the previous access, that's the reuse distance. And I only use get an average of the actual hit.
Okay.
On the other hand...
And the number of hits, if there is repeated hits, you have one per
exactly,
hit?
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So the question is, what is the real metric? Should I use reuse distance divide by number of hits to get a normalized reuse distance of some sort? So I can compare two different workloads?
Yeah, I have the same issue. Because in terms of replacement and the size of the cache and the hit ratio, it seems that these two metrics help in different ways. Reuse distance, a smaller reuse distance means only that you can keep the block of memory for less time. You don't need to keep it for a while. It's something like you can have more active replacement strategy. And the number of hits means, how effective is your cache.
Okay, so let me say a couple of things here. So to motivate, motivation. Technique one is content-based cache. To motivate that, I'm going to contrast sector reuse distance versus content reuse distance.
Yes.
Now, when I contrast these two, I need to have the same metric so I can compare them, right?
Yes. So
should I use the normalized reuse distance? What kind of
I guess there's no reason for high those distances. We could mention both.
But
because at this moment we are only trying to build an intuition on the reader that says it's better to do this.
Okay.
And both metrics are okay, are better.
Okay, so let me say that I'm going to contrast sector reuse distance versus content reuse distance, and sector hits is content hit. Instead of saying hit, I would say hit ratio.
Yes.
To make it more a generic metric.
Exactly.
Right? So this is a percentage value. This guy is not a percentage. This is an absolute number.
Yes.
So I cannot compare this number against this number.
Although
in isolation.
Although we could compare.
But in the case that it's not a hit, you do not take into account. So there may be more. All I'm saying is that there may be more candidates here than here. So there may be some sector reuses that do not appear in content reuse, and the vice versa also. Because if the content changed, then the sector gets reused, but the content does not get reused.
Okay, I know what you mean.
And so I'm looking at different candidate sets, which I guess is okay. Maybe if the workload is the same, then...
Yes, it's the same workload.
The same workload, but the distance does not tell me how many have that distance. And that, so I need to qualify it with the sector hit ratio, right? The hit ratio. I think we need both of them.
I guess to normalize this, we'll need more than the hit ratio, the number of requests. No, that's what I'm saying. It's exactly the same. Yeah. No, sorry. It's exactly the same. Yeah, hit ratio.
So hit ratio, right?
Yes, but I'm not sure how.
So, if the hit ratio is higher, it's better. Okay. What we can do is maybe first talk about hit ratio, and then say, okay, yes, hit ratio is important, but what is even more important for the utility of the content-based cache is how close they are.
Yes.
And which is determined by the average content reuse distance versus average sector reuse distance.
Yes.
So I think the order is first hit ratio and then the reuse distance.
Yes.
If we present it that way, I think we'll be fine. Okay, good. So, all right. So if I have a reuse distance, and do I need to motivate with the size of the cache in some way? To say, okay, or it doesn't matter?
I guess the intuition is that you could have smaller sizes, but we can leave the details for another section.
Okay. Here we just want to say, okay, there is a possibility that if you use a contest-based cache instead of sector-based cache,
you have
better cache hits.
Exactly.
Right? Okay, I think that should be enough to motivate this.
Yeah.
So the second one is dynamic replica retrieval. How do you motivate this? So here we say static similarity, right?
Yeah.
Static similarity of real content. So which means that we have to exclude all the special cases.
Right? Yes.
Say the static similarity of real content is...
With special cases you mean... For example,
all zeros.
Exactly. Okay.
So what do we want to say here? We want to say that static similarity does exist, and the average. So we have a measure for static similarity, and on an average, content or 1 in 5 content is duplicated. Something like that.
Yeah. For these.
For these workloads.
Yeah, so we explain the workloads
first,
before this, okay.
Yeah, workloads come first. So we did something like this very similar in the Borg paper, where we describe the workload and then we have...
I think you did the same also in Nexus, right? I mean, the first thing was to show the data and motivate based on the data. Yeah, I feel that that's the most logical.
Okay, so we talk about the workload. So in the workload, we have several of them. So one is online. So the question is, should we separate these out or have them together, the online and webmail? maybe it is good to just have them together, right?
Talking about
a virtualized server. And then we have mail, which is Cheetah. Then we have NFS, user homes.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe maybe here or after here would be nice to place all these workloads and their characteristics in the same context.
In the single graph,
remember that we have based on dynamic similarity, this trace goes like this and this other workload goes like that. So to see this and see in the same graph some artificial workloads to put that in context and compare, and then so the reader can have an idea where these workloads fall in a real world context, in a real context.
So should we do that for each of these motivations? I mean, so for instance, here we have static similarity, and then we can show static similarity graph.
Yes, I guess that would be nice. Yes.
In this section.
Yes. Okay. That would be nice.
All this work W1, W2, W3. Something like this.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right? So it's something like this, and we say, yes, it's like that.
And maybe you want to say some other workloads here?
I have data for some artificial workloads, like boots and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Booting. And
booting to machines,
mm-hmm.
things like that. That are completely artificial and will fall way far from our real workloads.
That's
but
a good
that
point.
That puts it in context.
Yeah. That's true. Exactly. And okay, that's great. Yeah, I think that will certainly help. And also I want to say static similarity of phrases, of workloads, disk. So this is static disk similarity, static workload similarity, right?
Yeah, that's a better name, right? Yes.
So I would say phone disk static similarity, and I say workload static similarity.
Yes, exactly.
So in this case,
you also say that there are many options for reads at each time, and maybe we can refer to FS2 or something like that showed pretty much the same, but at the file level, and it actually helps, something like that.
Okay, so maybe there is something that we can refer to here. But is there anything else that prompts us about dynamic replica retrieval?
You mean that motivates?
Yeah, motivates. Where am I going to use the graphs that I create?
That's for...
That's for 3.
For 3.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so in the second case, we have...
So for 3, the idea is that... I mean, you have an intersection between the workload, the working set. The thing is that it's too big to fit in memory.
So how can you take advantage of that? I think that's the idea. It's too big to fill in memory, so it's not worth for a cache, complete caching, memory cache. So we should take advantage of that in another way. One would be to actually increase duplicate that.
Right. So that's, I think that's a good way to present it. And on disk duplication can optimize further.
And another point is that using free space as a scratch space for doing things is completely okay, because we see that trends in storage users and say that we have more free space, or we are not using, as time goes on, we are not using that much for disk, right?
Trends in capacity and disk temperature.
Exactly, perfect, yeah.
So, okay, the other thing is, because this has overhead, we need to talk about idle time availability.
Exactly, yes.
To create the duplicate.
And we can also show some graphs showing the, for all these real workloads, we see
idle time,
which are real work, not made up things.
Mm-hmm. So we don't have any analysis for showing idle times, right?
No, but we can borrow. I mean, we could do it easily, or we can borrow something from Borg. Something like that. You show the same thing, I guess. I remember, right? No.
No, with Borg we don't talk about idle times, although we should. But we don't, and we don't have any analysis to support it either. Yeah.
But there will be idle time, right? For sure.
I need to do this anyway for some of the other things that I'm doing with Akshat, so I can write it. I can work on this. Okay. So. So we need some graphs that show. For instance, if you look at one of the papers that I was reading from Leung, the analysis of the NFS traces, they show actually week-long trace you have in IO traffic.
Yeah, IO traffic.
Every day at night, day.
Perfect, yes.
So we can show that during nighttime you have the ability to do additional IO without too much overhead. Okay, so these are all saying that, well, we can, in fact, the cost of making duplicates is not so high.
Yeah.
Question is, what is the benefit of making duplicates? How do we motivate the benefit?
So I guess, what is the benefit? That question is answered without experiments. Right? That's why we need experiments, to answer that.
Can I say that on an average, the popular content is replicated 1.2, and with this, I can increase it to 2.5 or something like that?
Yeah, you could say something like that. Right? Based on the size of the working set and the amount of free memory, free space we have.
Yeah, so I guess the goal with this is to increase workload static similarity.
Exactly, yeah, everything's fitting, right? Yeah.
So we sort of use this, and basically optimization 3 directly does not help it.
Yeah,
it helps optimization 2, which is going to help performance.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is the graph that we show here is the question. The graph that we show here is overlaps.
Yeah.
Right?
Overlaps
in working set graph. Say, okay, if I make duplicates, then should I say something about the top 20% or the popular data here, or?
Yes, I guess the same
thing will appear for content.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good, because it's, well, we don't really need it because we have plenty of space. It will be nicer to have, I mean, the useful thing to replicate is even smaller. But it shouldn't be as small as the size of the memory or something like that. That would mean that you could actually cache it.
Right, that's true. So I guess, I mean, this part I can write completely independently, the number 3, because all the analysis I have. But number 1 and 2 will require data from you.
Yes, yes. I'll work on it. Yes. I guess with this we'll have pretty much a third or a little bit more of what we are trying to say on the paper.
That's true.
After this, I guess we should directly go to explain the optimizations, right? That follows this. Then talk about how we implemented for the experiments, and then show the experiments and
results.
And results.
Yeah, I think that would be it. So this section would be fairly critical.
Yes, that's the key thing.
So I just got an email from a guy in HP who I was bothering about fixing the cello traces, because the cello traces 99.
They don't have content though.
I remember looking at something that looked like a checksum of some sort.
Oh, that would be nice.
Yeah, let me see this.
But by the way, before I forget, there are some kind of traces for Venti.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And they have content?
Well, the thing is that they call it traces, but they're not really traces. What they have is the whole thing. So, I mean, the whole storage. So mm-hmm. based on that, they have some fields where they say when this block was created. So that's when they say you could use to replay traces. I mean, you could replay writes because you know when each block was created. That's the trick. But you don't have anything
read.
To read. Yeah.
I remember reading that in the paper. In the paper also they mentioned that, I think.
Yes.
Okay, let me find it in the background because I forgot where I put it. So I think Is there anything else that we are missing here? Can in the dynamic replica retrieval, can we say something about average seek distance? And what is how much to show, okay, if I have replicas, then my average seek distance has a potential to reduce by a certain value.
So yes, because we should be doing something like that. I think we were discussing that the other time. It's like, let's say you have a randomly distributed block and you have a copy per block, also randomly distributed. Remember that you reduce the working set to half, and so we were thinking that because the average seek distance for the whole thing is 1/3, for half will be even 6.
Right.
So you reduce from 1/3 to 1/6. I guess in average, I guess we could say something like that.
I guess the other interesting thing is, for instance, if you look at the disk seek curve, right? So this is seek time, and this is distance that you're trying to seek.
Not linear.
It's not linear. So first you have like this, and then you have like this. So if you reduce from here to here,
you don't do
much. There's not much difference. But if you're already here and you reduce small amount, you can substantially reduce the time.
Okay, we could use that because that means, yeah, actually that's good because I guess I could, I was thinking about doing some analysis like that. I mean, blocks are not completely distributed in the whole disk. It's more likely that if you have the ends, it will be a small compacted set of used blocks and a small compacted set of used blocks far away. So if you are redirecting going from here to here to this all other compact set of blocks, you're actually doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So if we show that in a VM, in a typical VM, requests go like, that would be nice. I mean, let's say for online and webmail, this is the whole disk, the disk for online and the disk for webmail put together.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that all the accesses will be like this. The accesses will be more like this and more like this.
That's true.
So we see that when you are redirecting, let's say this is one and this is access two and this is access one and access two, you are redirecting to this, to something here, very close. So I guess that's moving in that part of the graph, right?
I think I didn't get what you
said. Yeah, no.
The other thing is that when you merge the traces, right, you take into account the physical distance on disk.
Yes.
So you know how far away they are, and then you add the offset accordingly.
Yeah, what I do is, let's say I pull webmail here and online here. I know that the number of sectors in webmail is, let's say, 100, so I add 100 to all the accesses to both.
No, but what you're doing then is making them next to each other, right?
Yeah, that's what your question. No, not your question.
That is my question.
Yeah, I'm putting one after the other.
So you're putting them right next to each other?
No. I mean, yes, but the disk, this webmail disk ends here. And what I was saying is that I'm sure accesses are not distributed for webmail like this.
Mm-hmm.
Accesses are more likely like, let's say, like this, mm-hmm. or this, like this.
Right.
So that means...
So I guess my question is that if I have... In the best case scenario, when these disks get mapped to real disks, they are right next to each other.
Yes.
But it's possible that they are not, especially if they are VMDK files. They could be anywhere in the file system of the host, right?
Yeah.
So it could be that one disk is here, and then the other disk is here, on
yes.
the host.
Yes.
So which means that they are even farther away than just putting them together.
And that's more convenient for us.
I mean, it's not that it's more convenient for us, but in this case, we are looking at the best case, or I should say, the least possible improvement.
Yes.
Than if you were had something which are farther away.
Yes.
In reality, what we can do is look at the real disk and see where they are, and use that information to create the new merge.
Yeah, I guess that would be nice. I mean, if you have, let's say, 10 VMs,
mm-hmm.
and you put one after the other, what is the average number of VMs you have to jump between any two requesting any two VMs? It's 3, right?
3?
It's 1/3, also would be like 6, average 6.
Average 6 would be...
1/3 of it, I mean...
Not 1/3 of the entire... region, right?
Yeah, so if you use the idea of sectors, and now instead of it, use the idea of number of VMs you have to jump, if you have 10 VMs,
mm-hmm.
the average number of VMs you have, of VMs disk you have to jump at every two requests, random requests, is 3, right? 1/3 of 10.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, I guess we could use that number. I mean, that idea.
Assuming that there are 10.
Assuming that there are 10, we say they will be far away like this. Assuming that there are 2, they will most likely be one after the other.
Yeah.
But we don't have data for more than 2 years.
No, but what we could do is simply just use the reality of the web VM.
Yeah.
Web VM, and see where the VMDK files are and how far they are for online and web mail. And just use that static information, then we don't really have to make any assumptions and justify those assumptions.
Yes. Right?
Because we use actual real data.
Okay. Yeah.
To do the merge process.
Yeah, that would be get the iNode, ask the bucket first for the position of the iNode. I guess I can write something small and ask Eric to talk to Brian.
Oh, you mean because these are VMDK files?
Yeah.
And so what you would get is just the first block of the VMDK file.
Yeah.
And the first block of the other VMDK file. Which may be tricky because they may give you something like overlapping. So you have the first one like this and the second one like this because these are files, they can overlap. But the data is actually spread out across the entire disk in different portions, right?
But most likely they will be
in different locations.
Sequential. Right?
Well,
we don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if Eric agrees to find that information, we should use that information because it will simplify a lot of details for us. And if we do not end up with a situation like this, then we can use it.
Something else I can do, I can create, actually have my VMware and create 2 disks of that the same size to see my machine how far.
Well,
but
that
includes those files.
But that's not the real environment, right?
No. I mean,
some estimate.
Yeah. In case there is.
To have.
No.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. And you probably want to use try to replicate the or similar hierarchy of the file system, right? In web VM and on your local machine, if there is a way to do that.
But that. The one affect the placement of the disk, right? Of the virtual disk, of the file.
Yeah, the layout of the disk depends a lot on where the free space is, right?
Yes.
And it depends on the state of the file system. So I don't see why Eric would disagree to run your stuff. It's simple enough.
Yeah. So I get
the starting
position of the iNode.
Is there a way for you to get the last clock of the disk as well?
I don't know. I'm sure debug FS.
So debug FS will give you the first block of a file?
That I know how to do with a command in the debugger. But maybe you don't know how to. There are commands for specifying where is a specific block of a specific file.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I guess at the minimum, if we know the starting block and we see that they are separated by at least the size of the disk,
that's enough.
That's
yes.
good enough for
yes.
us. Yeah.
Yes.
And in the end, it does not matter where it is.
Yes.
Okay, so what would that help us with, though, by the way? That is going to... Oh, to create the merged trace.
Yes, now okay. I'm just putting one to the
other. Right, which is really, I would say, the best case scenario for
without
our stuff.
Yeah, we won't see that much improvement.
Yeah, because even if we create duplicates, they will be away.
Actually, if we see that way, in terms of, writing the script and ask editing and get the response for me again, replaying the traces again, which I was replaying, I guess it would be faster to replace the trace for one day using another configuration. Let's say, instead of putting like this, I put them like this.
Mm-hmm.
And have numbers for both. At least will be faster for me because I'm already playing like this. Could I do that?
Yeah, I guess that would be okay too. And the question then is, what should be the number that we report? And the other thing is, where is the free space? I guess the free space is distributed across all of this, right? Is interspersed within each disk. Yes. That would be the idea. I mean, the duplicated free space. No, scratch space is interspersed within the disk.
I haven't think about this actually putting. I was thinking about a much higher high number of scratch partitions.
A really high number.
Hundreds or even close to 1,000, but that won't help that much. It's too much metadata. But if you use these, it makes more sense to have much more smaller scratch spaces, right? Based on these.
Based on this information,
yes.
Yeah. Even a small improvement can
yes.
help. That's true. I agree. The other thing is...
So we could use this information. That sounds interesting. To calculate the number of scratch partitions.
Thing is, let's say that my VM1 is here, right? And VM2 is here, okay? If I make duplicates here and here, it does not help.
Yes.
Right?
They need to be close.
They need to be inside this.
Yeah, I mean, if it's...
It needs to be inside here. Right.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they can be close. If, for example, these scratch space can be far away if you have some other request that should go here or something like that.
So I guess the point is that we cannot arbitrarily say, okay, this should be duplicated as far away as possible.
Yes. No.
That does not make much
yes.
sense. So we have to be a little bit creative about how we use the scratch space.
Yep.
And taking the workload into account, right?
Yeah.
So if I see that my workload range is this area, then creating scratch space and putting stuff there is maybe not going to be useful at all. In fact, it can make things worse, possibly.
Yeah.
So...
Because you're shifting things.
So I guess the point is that you want to use the scratch space, which is intermingled with the working set, but then say that if I'm accessing this portion, I'm going to replicate it here.
Yeah.
Because it is in the range of the working set.
Yeah.
So So I guess something we have to say here is duplication technique needs to be aware of workload locality.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
Instead of placing it anywhere on disk.
Yeah. Yes. I guess we can leave it for later, but it would be nice to at least mention something about rotational delay or refer to some ideas that might help. I don't know.
For rotational delay?
Yeah. Or we won't consider it at all for anything.
If we go into rotational delay, it does get complicated, right?
But we could, I mean, the idea of, because we're choosing where to put replicas, for that choice, could we use some other word about rotation?
Dysmimic.
Dysmimic will help for choosing which one of the replicas is best to go.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, so I guess at the moment of picking, that's the only moment, but the thing is that even if we consider rotational delay, having more copies is still good if we do something like this.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And in fact, if we use disk mimic, maybe the savings will only be, I would guess, higher than
if
we don't consider disk in rotational delay. Right, because a significant component of the I/O time is rotational delay, and we are not in a position to improve that with replicas.
Yeah.
But if we know about rotational delay, then we can use replicas to improve that component as well as seek time. So I absolutely agree. We can.
Yeah, that's something we have to fight for.
Yeah. It's true. Right. Okay, so what else? So
explaining the optimization, I should do it completely.
Section 2 related stuff. Section 3 would be 3 techniques. Design, right?
Mm-hmm.
And system overview of some sort. I don't know if the architecture, having some sort of architecture helps.
There's another thing apart from explaining the optimizations, that is, pretty much all of these optimizations have many parameters, like size of cache or number of replicas, things like that. So should we do it at the same time with state optimizations, or dedicate a new section for
how to choose the parameters?
How to choose these parameters and make a deeper analysis of the traces? Because the idea would be that on the motivation we don't say all we know about the trace. I don't know.
Maybe we have section 4 here. On how to choose the parameters.
Yeah, and analyze deeper these traces, what we did on section 2 in context of this optimization.
Okay, so I guess section 4 is also pretty important. And then section 5 would be maybe results or some sort.
Yeah.
Experiments. And, so I guess we need to think more about how to present the results and what should be the metrics, what metrics. So, for instance, cache hit ratio. Is one, and I guess individual components of each optimization. Right? Mm-hmm. Need to do one separately with each other.
Yes.
But just doing three does not make any sense, right? Because three, it's not an optimization by itself.
Yeah, you
need. So we need to do one, then we can do two, and then we can do 2 plus 3.
And yes.
Then maybe 1 plus 2 plus 3, something like that.
Yeah, that's easy.
That would make sense.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty much what I'm doing. Yeah.
Cache hit ratio, average IO time, maybe. Right.
What I was doing is I'm block tracing. So after like block trace, I mean after I repeat the replay traces with the block trace, I can calculate D2C time. I guess that's the important thing, right?
That basically determines the IO efficiency.
Yes.
Of the system. Yeah, average D2C time makes sense.
By the way, I mean, because I'm replaying traces, what else do you think I should be measuring before I forgot and I have to replay everything again?
If you have block trace, I guess you can... Oh, I mean, you mean like hit ratio, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I should be measuring hit ratio.
Then you, maybe you can measure indirection ratio.
Yeah.
Indirection ratio. How many IOs got indirected, right? That sort of stuff.
CPU usage, memory, things like that, you think? No.
Because
I set the size of the cache by hand,
so
I know it in advance. Yeah, I guess that's it, yeah.
We need something here to motivate size of cache. Actually, that is the reuse distance, right?
Yeah.
So do we need to parameterize the cache size here? I guess so, right? I
mean, yes, but that kind of things, I guess, that was for section 4, so I don't know what section 4 is about. But a section 4, at the same time, we're showing the results, so I don't know.
Cache size, duplication, interval, history, this sort of stuff is what you want to do, right?
Yeah. Something I would like to show is that, I mean, based on these numbers we have for number of hits and reuse distance, it's not what you typically see for sectors. So there is another issue with the choice or design of a replacement strategy. And we show basically two things, LRU and ARC, and obviously ARC performs better because it's a second level cache. But at the same time, that opens the door for improvement, and we couldn't leave it like this. I mean, this should be improved, but because it's not exactly a... Yeah, I don't know.
Right, so, yeah, certainly we can talk about LRU versus ARC in section 4. So in this, what else to measure? What can we measure? What is the dynamic part of the system that we will not be able to find out later on?
Something about how the cache is working, the replacement, how it's... Because we said that shorter content reuse, shorter reuse distance means that you can keep the blocks for a shorter time. So, and you don't see such short reuse distance for sectors. You only see very, very, very small sector reuse distance, I mean, reuse distance for content in read. So that's another point to say that maybe ARC and LRU are not that, maybe ARC is not that adequate. We need something else that takes into advantage this really, really short reuse distances.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that, and show something about that. But, you know, it's just an intuition, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess let's say there is some room for improvement, because of short use distance for reads. I guess the other thing is, in the cache, does it make sense to cache writes? That's something we need to think about, right?